Welcome to the Chalk Care Barn Girl Podcast. Jeff Johnson here with Lisa Murphy.
Hello again.
And Annie Friday.
Hi.
Hey, Annie. So you started a school.
I did.
How's that going?
Oh, it's good. Yeah, it's every day's an adventure.
And what ages?
We are ages 3 to 12.
3 to 12. And that 3 to 12, that 12 end is kind of what I'm most interested in the topic. I want to talk a little bit about how this whole pandemic thing that's been going on, the 2 weeks to crush the curve has been going on for, 14 months now? One of the, I think, is going to be positive outcomes of that is that parents are looking at different ways of engaging and educating their children. I was looking at I got to drag it over here so I can kind of look at you guys and look at, I was looking at a survey that just came out. And look, this is a small survey of over 800, under 1,000 people. But there, I mean, that's a good survey size, apparently, for this kind of thing. 71% of voters back more school choice in how funding is spent. And the question they asked, the specific question was, school choice gives parents the right to use the tax dollars designated for their children's education to send their children to the public or private schools which best service their children's needs. Generally speaking, would you say yes, you support or oppose the concept? Would you say you support the or oppose the concept of school choice? So 71% of people said that they support this. Unless I'm misremembering, Annie, you were really big a couple years ago in public education and a real big supporter. And one of the reasons you opened your school is that evolution, that system kind of wasn't working and you've kind of embraced this kind of choice. And then you went out and created a choice, which I think is amazing.
We did. And that's still something I'm like wrestling with. And
yeah.
My own children, my oldest son is a first grader. He's still at our neighborhood public school.
Mm-hmm.
We've been lucky this year. He's been able to do his learning all virtually from my site. So he's learning virtually online and he got really lucky. He got his kindergarten teacher back. So he has a familiar teacher. She's phenomenal at the virtual stuff. Like she should be like a Lori Berkner or something. She's just got the energy level to engage kids regardless of whether there's a screen. So it's working for us. But I did, and I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where Betsy DeVos is from. We are like the heart of school choice. It's not working on a equitable level here yet. And that's hard to see, but I wanted to make sure when I opened a school, it wasn't just another school to muddy the landscape. So this is really different. We're self-directed. And a lot of our older kids, not all, but many of them have come from traumatic experiences in traditional school. And
sure.
So that's like, okay, this is needed.
And so that equity thing is a big thing here. And along those lines, one of the big pushes is to start tying funding to individual children, which would mean that if you are a parent, you would be able the funding would go to you to use how you felt. You'd be able to the funding wouldn't go to the schools, it would follow the child. And so the state of West Virginia within the last week has also made the decision that not only are they allowing school choice that you can take that funding to a private school, but you can use it for things like homeschooling as well. So for your program, would it benefit your program and the potential families involved if, what's the number here, on average American taxpayers spend a little over $15,000 a year on schools? What if every one of your families had a tax credit or the actual cash that they could send to your program for that? What would that mean for you as a program operator and for those parents as far as their choice goes?
It would be so exciting. We have some homeschool partnerships. So we're registered through the state with some of these school districts that offer homeschool funding. But you have to be a parent kind of already in that realm to know about that. And again, we're seeing that's mostly parents of privilege who have made a choice to homeschool. I think the biggest barrier to our school being truly diverse as far as socioeconomic status is tuition.
Yeah.
We have a sliding scale pay what you can model, but that still feels cumbersome, I think, to families with just the word tuition is scary. So that would be huge. I mean, that would be awesome. And that would definitely change the whole landscape of schooling in Grand Rapids and other cities like us that have neighborhood schools that are great schools that are not funded well because they're not in the right zip code or whatever.
Yeah. And even if they, I mean, even if they're getting that 15,000 plus per child and they are in, they're not in the right neighborhood, that means they're not attracting the best teachers and they're more likely to be failing kids. And if you're stuck if you're stuck based on your zip code in a school system, it really is limiting. And it turns out mostly poor children and not just black and brown kids, but poor period end up being stuck in those locations. And so tying that funding directly to those children gives those families that are economically disadvantaged more choice in what they're going to choose for their kids. And this poll, I'm looking at the breakdown, that 71% that were in favor of more school choice, 69% Democrat, 75% Republican. But then the racial ethnic breakdown is 73% white felt this, 66% of black respondents, 68% of Hispanic, and 66% of Asians were in favor of this. So it seems to be something, again, a real small poll, only 800 plus respondents, but it seems to be
a lot of discrepancy. Right?
Yeah, seems to be pretty consistent across the ethnic, racial, and political divides. So yet, who pushes against this? And I've got to go over a little bit of a rant here. The teachers' unions push against this. And look, if you go back and listen to episodes of this podcast, I'm anti early learning unions, because I think they don't focus as much on the needs of the children as I would like to see. And so that bias of mine carries over into teachers' unions as well. The teachers' unions, their goal isn't what's best for children. Their goal is what's best for teachers. And great, that's what their job is. But in a lot of situations, those interests of the teachers are in the exact opposite direction of what the needs of the children are. And so though that entity has really locked a lot of economically disadvantaged children into this monolithic public school system option. And so diversifying, putting in some more competition would be a benefit to a lot of children and potentially lift them out of that economic situation that they've probably been stuck in often for multiple generations. I got to stop for a breath. Sorry. I'll get off my soapbox. Thoughts?
Yeah. You know, it's just been interesting. I think a lot of our year has been spent on this in a lot of ways. We've had people reaching out to us. I think, like you said, people in general are seeing possibilities that didn't exist before the pandemic, which is really one really amazing thing to watch come out of this. I think families are seeing choices. They're seeing that kids can learn without necessarily all this pressure to learn, that they can learn without being told what to learn and when to learn it. We've gotten a lot of calls from people who think that we just whipped this together in like a month and in response to the pandemic. And they're saying, well, I want to open a school. How can I open my school? And so we started doing more consulting with people on how open a school, which has been cool. We've had a few people kind of do it the sneaky way and say like, I'm interested in your school for my child. And like halfway through the conversation, we're like, well, these aren't the questions we get from prospective parents.
They're the questions we get from prospective competitors, right? This is what my competition would be interested in.
Exactly. And we, you know, and that's, we're in a town small enough that we're going to run into these people again. I'm like, where do you think you're going to hide from us? Like we're trying to really approach it from an abundance mindset of like, there are lots of kids who need alternatives to traditional schools.
Absolutely.
And it's going to look differently how we all put it together, but it's going to benefit the whole greater good by having different options out there.
And you're going to only get to be able to enroll so many kids.
Right. And that's exactly, we've come to that termed many times over this year, like, we have to ensure that we have ultimate trust with our families doing what we're doing and being a little bit more free with risky play and unassessed learning and things like that. That's kind of scary to many people. So we don't want to grow bigger than what we are. We've got about 25 kids every day. Seeing the benefits, like you brought up the multi-age thing at first, like that has been the biggest mind-blowing factor of our year, watching three-year-olds interact with nine-year-olds and 12-year-olds and what they get from that and the reduction of challenging behaviors that comes from it, all that stuff. So I think that would be really cool to see funding be able to like be given to parents to choose what they do with it.
And I mean, there are plenty of good public schools out there in the world, and there are a lot of real crappy ones. And a lot of times they're both getting the same funding. In a community, you might have two schools that their outcomes and their way of approaching children are diametrically opposed, and they're getting the exact same funding per child. I've always been a fan of competition because I think competition brings out the best. Lisa Murphy, if somebody decided your community with the we'll make it the county, you know, driving distance, a 30-mile drive, as far as you drive to go to dinner, Lisa Murphy might drive further than some other people to get to a good restaurant. But let's say within a 45-minute drive of your place, what if the government decided, okay, well, here's the restaurant option we have. And that was your only choice. You had one restaurant option and yeah, exactly. When it comes to going out to eat, we like to have variety. We like to have choice. And it's that goodness of fit and what you happen to be interested in. You go find that and you engage in that. What if somebody decided, oh, we can have one type of cell phone. And that's the best cell phone or one computer. And it might make it easier for some people, but some people would really push back and want more choice and variation. And when we do limit it to one option, we also limit the innovations that can take place too. If this is the way we do things, if this is the way we've always done things, there's we have no competition, there's no reason to innovate.
Right.
Steve Jobs wouldn't have revolutionized the telephone with the iPhone. It's almost half a generation ago. If there'd been no opportunity for competition, and so competition kind of raises the level everybody else is playing at instead of lowering.
And I think it provides for that. You already said it, the goodness of fit, but that individualization.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
That I know it might be a little more out of the way, but this is where I know my kid needs to go. I mean, I remember my sister way back when she was still looking for childcare options, like preschool options, and her boys are, you know, 12 now, but she was willing to drive. And people are like, but there's a school right here in the neighborhood. She's like, no, that's not where my kids fit and being willing to do that. And you don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. And to kind of pull this back into early learning, there's always initiatives for more funding for early learning. Right. And I mean, my 30 years in the profession, I haven't seen many of them do much. I mean, there's always more block grants and there's nothing seems to move the needle, in any way, but in the future, what if that funding was tied to individual children instead of giving out in block grants to programs or states or counties to use as they see fit? What I've seen in the last 30 years is we've grown more bureaucracy. There are more layers of bookkeepers and record keepers and deciders between parents and programs and those kind of things. But what if that funding was tied directly to parents to spend? Here's my.
Well, the bad schools would probably finally go away, right? Because nobody would want their kid in there. If they're always getting funded, then the laminated ladies keep getting and going to work and going to work and going to work and going to work instead of channeling the funding to the programs where that are doing the best good.
And I think it would also lead to more specialty programs that were again, it's that goodness of fit that were catering to the specific needs of certain families. And so that diverse population out there, they would be more likely to be able to find things that met their specific needs or desires for their children.
A country full of schools that had no more than 25, 30 kids there on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Like how awesome that could be. You could have the school like that could focus on, it could be like super, super specific and you'd still find 25 families that would be like, that's my kid's place.
Yeah. And economically it would maybe draw more people back to the teaching, early learning or elementary, that field, because, you know, and those numbers have been gone too. The numbers of people that are entering the field have decreased, and the number of people who are leaving the fields is on the rise. But imagine if you could set up your own program where you can have 20 kids in your program, and your staff wise, you're paying for you a bookkeeper who's kind of outsourced and maybe an assistant that you can pay fairly well because that funding is tied to the children, and run a very unique specialized program where you really do, because of a small size, you have that sense of community and ownership, and you can build those relationships. I can't see what's wrong with it, but there are people out there that are actively pushing against it because it doesn't meet their needs, which
it's different.
The people that have power, when you have power, the last thing you want to do is give up power, right? And so it's going to be hard for this to happen when those power holders are reluctant to give up their power and control over things.
I also think it assumes that parents are that attuned to their kids and their kids' needs and best school choice. I see a lot of parents who don't base it on their kids at all, but, you know, where are the parents that they want to socialize with sending their kids to? Where's the most convenient place on my way to work? You know, like your sister's experience, Lisa, that you just shared, that I feel like is more the anomaly than the standard, right? Like driving out of your way to get to the right school for your kid is awesome and commendable. And that's like great that you are that attuned to your kid. But, and then I think the other thing that happens with school is you drop your kids off and you don't always know what happens there, right? Like we've had charter schools here. I've heard horror stories that parents would be chilled to the bone to hear, but they don't even think that that's happening there because the scores look good, right?
Mm-hmm. And there are probably similar stories about the local public school as well. I mean, if you really started digging into the stories that are going around, my thing is I'm on the side that trusts parents to step up in when they have the opportunity. I think with when we have the same system we've had for 100+ years, and that's the go-to that everybody's used to, nobody is interested in looking under the covers or under the hood and seeing what makes things run, because that's the only option you have. And so what are you going to do when
I turned out okay?
Yeah. Did you? yeah. But when you're forced to kind of do some reflecting and some planning, and you're empowered to do it, I like to trust in people stepping up. I grin. There's that 20% out there that will never be good at that. But I also don't think that the people. I'm a big fan of liberty, and I think people often make the best choices for themselves and their crew instead of relying on this unnamed other group of experts to make decisions for them. Well, and I'm probably totally wrong too.
If a bunch of unique,
but that's just where my bias is.
If a Go bunch ahead. Sorry, of Lisa. Unique, that's okay. I interrupt you all the time. If a bunch of unique, I'm saying novel, just to paint a little bit of a picture, if all of a sudden communities started popping up with them too, that could call somebody to action of paying a little bit more attention. I think the other thing that would be a byproduct to that is that those of us who would be more of a play-based kind of option wouldn't have to be so explainy, because mm-hmm. it'd be like, yo, if this is not what you want to have for lunch, then go find somewhere else. I don't need to convince you. but this is our unique program. This is how we run the show here. And if you don't like it, that's 100% okay, because there are a variety of other options. And that's always intriguing to me too, because you could be a little bit more hyper specific to the kind of program you wanted to run without having to worry, because you're going to attract the people who belong there.
Yeah. 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 Something to think about.
Like, from experience this year, I will say we've spent, and you guys probably could have told me this when we talked last summer, when I was clearly just all sunshine and rainbows, I'm opening a school. We spent all the time this year on all the families who weren't in the right place, right? We spent so much time banging our head against the wall just because we had some wrong families. That was a wrong, but yeah, I do think there was like almost a missed opportunity a year ago. Like, we could have opened thousands and thousands of micro schools to keep kids in school. Every church basement, every conference room that wasn't being used could have had 10 kids
in
person learning. Like, if it had been government sanctioned podding, and as opposed to only the, you know, it was a big conversation piece that only the privileged got to pod this year or whatever. Like, it could have been done.
If that funding would have been tied to the kids, it could have easily been done.
Yep.
But I mean, look, it's kind of like turning a tanker in the Suez Canal. You got to be careful what you're doing. And it takes time to adjust course and everything. But I think the pandemic has accelerated this. And I went on my rant about teachers unions. Look, if you're a teacher in a teachers union, good for you. You got to have somebody out for your benefit. But over the course of the last year, the favorability ratings of teachers unions has plummeted as well. It's not just Jeff ranting about this. If you look at the polls, I didn't pull anything up before we started this episode, but there's a lot of people that are kind of pushing back on them and wanting to take away some of the power they have over what's happening with children. Any final thoughts on this one before we pull the plug? Lisa's got to get to a gig.
Do
we good?
No, I liked it.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We will be back next week with episode 700. Some of you probably joined us for the recording session, which hasn't quite happened yet. So I'm gonna assume it went well. I don't know. Find out next week. Could have been a real shit show. Who knows? Tune in. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.